El Vidrio, Juquila, pues toda esa región que nos está llevando a lo que es a caer a lo que es la costa oaxaqueña, y pues una región muy vasta, muy en algunas partes exuberantes, ¿verdad? De la sierra, ¿verdad? Bueno, pues lo que yo te quería comentar el día de hoy es más o menos de decirle a la audiencia de cómo está dividido nuestro estado en 8 regiones, lo que es lo que mencionas tú, que es la Sierra Sur, la Sierra Norte, que son los pueblos de la Sierra Juárez, de donde precisamente está hablando la compañera, de San Jerónimo Xochina, de todos esos pueblos que se encuentran ubicados allá, empezando desde Ixtlán, Talea de Castro, Macuiltianguis, y todos los cajonos y todos esos pueblos que se encuentran alojados allí. Esa es la Sierra Norte, y de ahí pues nos podemos bajar para la región del Istmo de Tehuantepec, ¿verdad? Que empieza desde allá, colindando con Chiapas está Chahuites, Tapanatepec, y después nos venimos para Juchitán, los pueblos aledaños a Juchitán, El Espinal, Tehuantepec, y ya bajando un poquito más para acá, para Jalapa del Marqués.
Retomando aquí lo de la Sierra Norte, fíjate, bueno, como estaba comentando hace rato, ¿no? Las diferentes regiones del estado de Oaxaca, aparte de su cultura, aparte de sus tradiciones, también están ahorita resistiendo, están en una gran resistencia en contra de una imposición, de una invasión por parte de las empresas transnacionales, no nada más transnacionales, sino también las empresas nacionales, ¿no? Por ejemplo, en la Sierra Juárez, ahorita que estabas tocando la Sierra Norte, desafortunadamente nuestras comunidades están siendo reprimidas de cierta manera, están siendo despojadas de sus territorios por intereses como las compañías mineras, ¿no? Posteriormente, como te decía, vamos a tocar estos temas, vamos a ahondar un poquito más. Ahorita que estamos aquí en la Sierra Norte, pues vamos a pasar a escuchar esta melodía por ahí, por favor, compañeros.
Tengo miedo volver a mi pueblo, encontrar los bosques desiertos. Tengo miedo volver a mi pueblo, encontrar al abuelo ya muerto. Tengo miedo volver a mi pueblo, hallar las sonrisas de hermanos que en las tardes de abril y de mayo alegraban las fiestas del pueblo. Tengo miedo volver a mi pueblo y encontrar a mi madre llorando, de pensar que su hijo anda lejos y no ver su cercano regreso. Tengo miedo encontrar a mi hermano trabajando terrenos ajenos, preguntar por las tierras de antaño e informarme que son de un extraño. Me da gusto volver a mi pueblo y encontrar a la abuela sonriendo, cobijarme en sus brazos y hablando y llenarme de cuentos de niño. Me da gusto volver a mi pueblo y encontrar a mi novia esperando, con guitarras y amigos llevarle las canciones ya nuevas que traigo. Me da gusto encontrar a mi padre con la gente por siempre luchando, por hacer que la tierra produzca y evitar que nos roben la sangre. volver a mi pueblo, sin embargo no puedo evitarlo. Me da gusto volver a mi pueblo, entregarle mi canto rodado. La 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 la.
Bueno, estuvimos escuchando a Jaime Luna, compositor, activista de la comunidad de San Pablo Guelatao, ubicada en la Sierra Juárez, en la Sierra Norte del estado de Oaxaca. Dice, preguntar por la tierra de antaño e informarme que son de un extraño. Pues esa es la preocupación de nuestras comunidades, de nuestra gente, que desafortunadamente, como estábamos comentando, están siendo despojadas de su territorio por muchas situaciones y por muchos intereses. Y pues de la Sierra Juárez, pues nos vamos aquí con la compañera Brenda Nicolás, que nos tiene una invitación para un evento de su comunidad aquí en Los Ángeles, Brenda.
Sí, bueno, vamos a movernos un poco de tema, ya que el tiempo abarca, y es sobre una invitación del Centro Social San Jerónimo Xochina, que les hace el pueblo de Xochina, ¿no?, a todos los que están escuchando y a otros de la comunidad. A una invitación a ustedes y a su apreciable familia a su gran kermés en honor al patrón de su pueblo, ¿no?, que es sábado 1 de octubre de este año, y empieza de 5 de la tarde a 1 de la mañana, ¿no?, todo el día, y la dirección es 2885 East Washington Boulevard, aquí en Los Ángeles, el código postal 90023, y administrarán en vivo los grupos Sonora Dinamita, La Migra, la banda de su pueblo San Jerónimo Xochina, y la banda filarmónica Herencia Xochileña, igual que el sonido carusel, ¿no? Y habrán también varias danzas sorpresas, al igual que antojitos oaxaqueños, ya sea como tlayudas, tacos, tamales, otras bebidas, ¿no?, oaxaqueñas al igual. Donación adelantado es $12 y en la puerta son 15. Y cualquier información que tengan para recibir los boletos en adelantado, llamen al 323-479-3803 o al 323-590-3891. Muchísimas gracias, y los pueden encontrar en la página de Facebook San Jerónimo Xochina LA. Gracias.
¿Va a haber tlayudas, Brenda?
Sí, tlayudas. Ahí vamos a estar todas en la cocina, porque es como estabas diciendo hace ratito, ¿no?, parte de esa actividad que todavía hacen los oaxaqueños indígenas aquí en Los Ángeles, y que tratan de mantener sus tradiciones, ¿no?, y que es por usos y costumbres que se recauda ese tipo de kermés para tener fondos monetariamente y mandarlos al pueblo, ¿no?, ya sea para la escuela, para X cosa, ¿no?, que necesita la escuela, ya que a la comunidad, ya que es un pueblo de la sierra y se gobierna por usos y costumbres, o sea que no necesariamente se mete el gobierno directamente a mandarnos, ¿no?
Para mejorar la infraestructura de la comunidad,
sí,
¿no? Y esta actividad es a través del Tequio, ¿no? Lo que están realizando aquí en Los Ángeles.
Sí, del Tequio, y también se puede se conoce también como comunalidad, ¿no?, que es lo que habla este Jaime Luna, que acaba de cantar esa canción, ¿no? Pero esta comunidad es algo transnacional, ¿no?, que no para cuando uno migra, sino que continúa ahora con sus migrantes y con los hijos de los migrantes que están haciendo aquí, que ya son mucho, casi la mitad de los que van a estas organizaciones y los que ayudan a que estos eventos se tomen a cabo, ¿no?
No, pues gracias, muchas gracias, Brenda. Pues bueno, invitamos nuevamente a todos los radioescuchas a que nos acompañen. Ya tienen la dirección, los números, teléfonos a donde pueden comunicarse. Bueno, pues vamos a tratar de continuar con esto. Nos vamos a la cuenca del Papaloapan. ¿Qué nos puedes decir de la cuenca, mi estimado Raúl? Bueno,
Raúl. A Brenda. Sí, bueno, ¿sí me escuchas?
Sí, claro, aquí estamos, Raúl.
Sí, estaba ahí escuchando la invitación para la kermés. Pues ahí vamos a ir a apoyar.
Oh, gracias.
Porque de esta manera es como las organizaciones culturales como las de nosotros, así recaudamos nuestros fondos. Y pues de paso, pues pues seguimos promoviendo las costumbres, la comida, los bailes folclóricos, la música de banda filarmónica, ¿verdad?
Claro, claro. Disculpa, Raúl, disculpa, sí. Ya tenemos poco tiempo por la media hora y pues bueno, quiero que nos diga algo la compañera.
Sí, adelante.
Genima sigue, que es oaxaqueña pero radica en Nayarit, ¿verdad? Así. Uh-huh. Tenemos un poco tiempo ya para despedirnos. ¿Algún saludo?
Pues sí, a todas las personas que están trabajando, que se encuentran lejos de su familia, pues estamos, pues no están solos, toda la comunidad oaxaqueña estamos para apoyarnos y debemos de tener eso siempre en cuenta.
Claro, claro, ¿no? Pues muchísimas gracias. El próximo programa espero que nos acompañes. Vamos a abarcar de manera un poco más precisa los temas por el hecho de que hoy desafortunadamente tenemos poco tiempo. Pues pasamos a despedirnos. Muchas gracias, Brenda, por acompañarnos.
Muchas gracias, Roberto, por la invitación.
Buenas noches, compañera. Buenas noches. Y bueno, le damos la gracia aquí a Gary Vaca en los controles, al compañero Chuy y al compañero Velázquez. Los dejamos con Contragolpe. Gracias.
¿Y comentarios?
Visite nuestra página de Facebook.
Chimaringa. Join us at the Liberated Zone of Freedom Now every Saturday from 11 to noon for a Pan-African perspective on world affairs in a fly music mix. And as always, we stand ready for the revolution.
Estás escuchando Radio Pacífica, KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Ángeles, 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara, mundialmente por kpfk.org. Quédate con nosotros. KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles y 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara. Y a través del mundo en kpfk.org.
Usa la conciencia, latino.
I'm Sakura Saunders. You're listening to Freak Radio Santa Cruz, FRSC 101.
And coming up next on this wild and crazy station, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides, your homeless civil rights show, with a call in or two from different folks, including Big Drum Brent, as I used to call him. I'm not sure what I call him these days. That's Brent Adams, who's been attending Parks and Rec meetings and going out on flashlights in the park expeditions with Bigots Unanimous, led by the sheriffs, as I like to call them. And, hey, there's going to be lots of stuff coming up, so don't go away, but stay tuned, and I'll stay tuned with you. The call-in number to this show is 831-427-3772. And, so we'll be with you in just a moment. We're going to have a moment or two of dead air as I scour the computer here, but don't go away.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
Yeah, that was a bit more dead air than I figured, but if you're still there, I'm happy to hear it. A little problem here in the studio, but I think we're operating again. Oh, I'm a tad out of breath, so bear with me while I catch my breath. And we're going to pick up from where I left off on Sunday. Sunday's show is longer. And sometimes that's good, and sometimes that's bad. But we were interviewing activist Pat Colby, who has been writing recently about recycling and the attacks on recyclers who are often homeless, although not always, and the shutdown of recycling centers in different places. She's been corresponding with activist Carol Denny, who writes for the homeless newspaper Street Spirit. And that's a weekly paper sold by homeless people here and throughout the Bay Area for as a sort of an alternative to panhandling, which, as far as I'm concerned, is also completely legitimate And the real attempt to run off homeless people hasn't is usually focused on panhandlers, but they go after people selling street papers, people sitting down, people trying to get sleep at night or rest during the day. It is an ongoing low-grade war on terror on poor people. And the terror isn't continuous, but you never can tell when it's going to strike. And it's a real issue, although that's one of the things I'm going to be covering in this show, is the fight back against that that has been going on surprisingly more recently, at least I've been hearing about it more recently, by legal struggles. Lawsuits by the American Civil Liberties Union and other legal defense groups in different areas, Honolulu, Sarasota, Florida, Marysville, California, and, of course, activity at in a non-court setting, whether it's Oakland considering defending homeless encampments, Santa Rosa safe parking zones, and, of course, we may get some updates from activist Brent Adams, who has been doing a statewide documentary on this. Brent and I don't always agree on everything, as regular listeners to the show may know, and we've clashed, but that's fine. Who agrees on everything anyway? So let me begin with picking up where Pat Colby left off. I interviewed her about a week and a half ago at Freedom Sleep Out number 61. That's the one before the last one 2 days ago, which was number 62, which is an activity that happens in front of City Hall every Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. Essentially, homeless people in violation of the city's absurd and cruel sleeping ban that criminalizes sleeping from 11 to 8:30 in the morning anywhere on any public property and on much private property as well, as I may have said, gosh, over probably 2,000 or 3,000 times on this station and elsewhere. And they gather in front of City Hall on the sidewalk and sleep there, both as a way of maintaining for at least one night a week a sense of community. People are donate food, particularly India Joes and Food Not Bombs, and they lie down on the sidewalk and they sleep. And police, whether out of compassion, weariness themselves, direct orders from their superiors not to embarrass the community by attacking protesters directly, don't get citations for sleeping, though they get them elsewhere around the city on a regular basis. Anyway, Pat is now outside herself, lives in her vehicle, and was giving us a report on, well, what is a kind of a follow-up to Zob Hirschfeld and the HUF organization, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom's give-a-shit campaign, largely Zob's campaign. I want to, you know, we have to acknowledge this is really his work. He's a regular activist with the Freedom Sleepers. I think he's currently on sabbatical, but he has been active, very active, over the last year with Freedom Sleepers, hanging in there nightly, providing food, providing company, providing documentation and writing on these issues. And anyway, I ran into Pat Colby about 10 days ago there, and she gave me an account of some of the research that she was doing with her brother, John Colby, both of whom are homeless and now living in a vehicle donated by, I guess, now incarcerated activist Lucero Luna. I don't know where she's incarcerated, but she, as I've mentioned in the last show, has racked up many tickets for essentially legal, or I should say illegal, but innocent behavior, so essentially protest behavior, sitting down on the sidewalk deliberately to demonstrate to the community that they should not feel constrained, compelled, and intimidated by the laws that City Council has passed in the interests of paranoid or greedy merchants who want to run homeless people off the downtown streets and make it essentially a gated community, and it's without gates, because that looks so un-Santa Cruz, if you will. Although I guess some people want to change the whole definition of Santa Cruz from a compassionate community, which it never really was, or a hip community, which it claimed to be at different times, to a smart, forward-looking, gentrified community, which it's becoming, unfortunately. Anyway, let's tune in on Colby and her analysis and experiences in the parks.
So it's about 5 after 10. I'm here at Freedom Sleepout number 61.
Let me spill ahead a bit with that. I thought I'd actually put that into the appropriate place, and I haven't. But I'm going to, if I can. Let's see if we can here. I think it's... We left off with, after Pat gave a rather lengthy account of some of the experiences of living outside, the costs, the difficulties, and the positive aspects of it, too. And we are picking up on it pretty much where she left off. And that would be... I guess more or less right here.
No, we won't get into
only
that.
In their mind.
I see. Well, what about in the parks? Now you say that I remember in your email that you sent your emails you sent me there was some discussion of complaints about park facilities.
Oh, definitely. Now we're checking out parks. We're doing under the Give a Shit campaign. We're going to rate all the bathrooms in all the parks. So we went to the park on Bay in California. And the men's bathroom we'll start with. The lock wouldn't lock, and the toilet wouldn't flush. So my brother had to leave a dump in there, and the next person couldn't use the toilet. Then there's nowhere to wash your hands. It's outside. And so the first time I used the park, the water actually worked, but the soap dispenser had been broken off, so there was no soap. So you literally just wasting your time. In the women's bathroom, the button to make it flush... If you have any hand mobility disabilities, it's really hard to push it. And none of them are ADA accessible. A wheelchair can't get through. And the second time we used the park, which was on Sunday, the water had been turned off. So I called our friendly dispatch people at the call center for SGPD. And within 10 minutes, the head of the Rangers called. He says, what is your problem? He says, well, I'm new to this job. Probably Cynthia Matthews' son. Because he's new.
John Matthews.
I didn't ask him his name. I should have usually. I get the
John
name and bed.
Dealing with the Johns.
But he was all freaked out, yeah. He's all like, that's not my job. I'm enforcement. I said, well, I'm not the one who called you. It was dispatch. But you do need to know this is really embarrassing for Santa Cruz. I go, there's a family having a huge birthday party. There's tourists. And you've got all these problems with your bathroom. And then I guess on Sunday, the woman's bathroom door wasn't locking. So if a woman or a child was in there, they could be raped.
So what was done about this?
Well, we noticed him, like, about an hour and a half later, the water was turned on. I don't know. By the next day, he promised at 3:30 that all the other issues would be addressed.
That would be Monday, yesterday.
Tuesday, really, yeah.
Or today. And you haven't checked that yet?
No, we haven't been back there because we found out that the meth dealer of Mission Gardens that's now homeless as well. That started all the trouble for us at Mission Gardens.
He, too, was evicted?
Well, yeah, they had to get rid of him because the media and the feds were sniffing around, and these two are obviously criminals.
So you're both roaming the city. Will you both be picketing the sleeping band together?
No, but I found out where he's dealing drugs, and it's causing a problem at this place because all these people... not that I'm against all drugs, I'm really against meth because it's ruined the last 10 years of my life.
but all these bikes are there, all the employees' cars are being broken into. Ace is having stuff stolen. They have to lock everything down. They have to take everything in. So all those business owners are upset, and John's been interviewing them. So we're going to help them with their problem, and we're going to get the assholes that started our whole 10 years of terror and stalking. Because the people...
Who will then be replaced by new assholes.
Yeah, but they won't be stalking us. But, and they smoke me to death so that I can't be around secondhand smoke at all. I mean, it causes...
Now, this is your first sleep out here at the Freedom Sleep Out in quite a while.
Right? Yeah, and unfortunately, I had to interrupt it because I went to my place that I rent that has a bathroom, a shower, a refrigerator, and access to a computer. And I found out you don't drink strawberry lemonade late at night.
Mm.
So I took off to go there, and my battery died. It died at PetSmart when I was buying more stuff for my cats. I got a litter pad because I'm tired of sleeping on little bits of litter.
So you walked back here?
No, so I had to have... It was the same guy. I lost all four of my toes. They're all gone, my AAA. So I have to find money to get John a AAA card so I get four more toes. But I did have to end up buying the battery that I decided not to buy at PetSmart. I had to buy it at
Satellite. We're going to leave these details. And is there anything you want to add to this rather interesting and somewhat distressing story?
I think the best part out of it is, I guess, everyone thought we were bluffing when we said that we'd become homeless. They thought we were just exaggerating. I mean, my doctor wrote a letter that being homeless is a death sentence for me. And everybody up in the government was upset. HUD OIG said he made it a problem by sending that up to the Secretary of HUD. So I guess we called their bluff, because now we tell the police every night where we're sleeping. And we have a place and a friend that lets other people sleep there. So instead of being harassed by Take Back Santa Cruz, we're all being protected by the police. Because there were some cars, since they did the death threat on September 1st, there were some cars that seemed to be coming, and then it seemed like they were taking pictures because Robin Jansen took a picture.
Maybe they find you photogenic.
Oh, yeah. Robin Jansen was taking pictures of my friends moving and their
lives.
Who's
Robin Jansen?
She's addict that's been stalking me and connected up with Take Back, with all the stories my brother and I are sleeping
so
together.
So the police, you say, have been protecting you for the last four nights.
Yeah, they show up within 5 minutes to make sure we're safe.
Well, if this continues, we may have to investigate.
Yeah, so what I figure is when you're in a position of power to help a lot of others, you get a lot more homeless people hanging out with you, so you make sure they're not being harassed. I do want to add one last thing to this interview, is living out of the van and being places, I'm finding out there's a lot more homeless people than we know. There's a lot more going under the radar. There's tons of people. It looks like students. It looks like people that are working. They're clean and everything, but they're living and they're sleeping at the Safeway. They're sleeping in the parks during the day, getting some Rochelle snoozes before they're not allowed to sleep. So I'm writing a journal and documenting everything, and John's going to do video documentation, and we're going to send it all to Tricia Bauman. So hopefully
she's an attorney for the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty. There were some promises that there would be some, or indications there was supposed to be a lawsuit around the sleeping ban last December, and so far we haven't.
It wasn't her fault.
Diddly squat. So tell me, give me an update on this.
Well, basically, the person that she used as the contact, Steve Plage, he didn't interview homeless people. He didn't get their testimony. That's what an attorney needs. He sent articles that he wrote and other people wrote on IndieBay, which talked about the activists, the house people. So there's the stories that needed to be done more and put out there. So I'm going to make sure they get to her. And she's already been checking out John's LinkedIn. We have Joe Simidian, who wrote the cyber-stalking law for California that Kamala Harris was supposed to use for us.
I think we're going to talk about this
But I'm going to say this real fast.
Next time. You have 35 seconds.
Well, he asked us to be friends on LinkedIn. We're getting all these high government officials asking to be
our
friends.
Before you discredit yourself further, I will be moving on. But will you be, this is the most important question, coming to the Huff meeting?
John doesn't want to come, but I bought that that Twizzlers that you like to bring, and I'll come.
You don't have to bring Twizzlers.
No, but there was one bag half price, so I thought of
you. Well, that's very thoughtful. You got to get Red Vines. Twizzlers suck.
But hopefully you have some gas money, because we have no money to buy food now that we had to replace this battery.
Well, so in other words, you're coming to panhandle at the Huff meeting? Is that the plan?
No. But now that I'm
now
really,
that you think of it.
Now that I'm really freaked out because I just had to replace a battery. And then my other car.
We're going to leave it here.
The tire got slashed over at the Goodyear because they all know the license plate. But
Pat, and we've been talking worse with Pat, but reaffirm that for us. Who have we been talking with?
As far as I know, I'm still Pat Colby.
She is Pat Colby.
But we're going to make change by really documenting it well, getting officers' numbers, getting everything, getting stories, video documentation.
A difficult task for some people who currently don't even have enough money to buy food. But we'll see how that works out.
Not really. We already have the camera equipment, and we're already homeless. So
right, no,
we
just,
might as well take advantage of it.
I'm pleased that you do. And maybe we'll see you tomorrow. And if not, hopefully continue to get reports from you, which I'll pass on to the community. Thank you, Pat.
Will it be just you and me at the Huff meeting?
You could be. It could. It's becoming an endangered species situation.
Yeah, so we have been very busy.
I believe it.
And that was the inevitable, and one might say interminable, Pat Colby, who actually has got a lot of good things to say, but beware when she says she's going to end what she's saying. Often it has to be done, one has to end it oneself. In any case, that was Freedom Sleep Out number 61. And what I'm going to play next is it's something I did. It's a recording I did, an interview actually, with a fellow named Pat Malo. And a few other folks, too, who are up in Felton at a meeting that the county authorities were holding to encourage others to register, actually cannabis growers, marijuana growers, to register their fields, their property, their grows, in anticipation of the passage of a law that has not even been set in final form by the Board of Supervisors. I like to call them stupid vipers, because of their reactionary views and actions on a number of issues. But you may remember a year ago the Board of Supervisors actually largely banned commercial growing, although we don't have legal commercial growing yet in California. It's likely to be made a possibility, if not a reality, by a November initiative. I think it's Proposition 64, which actually a number of growers are opposing, and a number of medical marijuana advocates as well, something that's not getting much play in the newspapers when you see the debate about it. You just get the regular hacks ranting about the dangers of marijuana addiction, children eating marijuana candy, drivers smoking marijuana and smashing into other cars, schizophrenia, depression, I mean, anything they can pull out of the bag, usually without any stats. But anyway, this whole discussion, I recorded a bit of the registration presentation by the county official, but it was kind of dry and, in my mind, a premature attempt to rope a lot of people into picking up on this registration. Apparently very few have, as you're going to learn from this interview with Pat Malo, who has been an organizer with the Cannabis, I think it's the Cannabis Advocates Alliance. This is a group that, when this anti-marijuana growing law was passed last year, in, I guess, late spring, the CAA got together and organized an effective campaign very quickly, because you only have a month to do it, to prompt a referendum to overturn the supervisor's law. And the supervisors quickly retreated and withdrew their law, lest they be faced with an actually reasonable and sensible law proposed by the cannabis growers themselves. And instead, they cooked up a thing called the C4 Committee, which spent a year supposedly examining all the alternatives and talking to the different interest groups and holding public meetings. Some of this actually happened. And then coming up with a proposal, which the Board of Supervisors largely ignored, as I understood from a number of people who were either on it. Yes, actually, there were two activists who were on it who I've interviewed on the show in the last 4 or 5 months. I don't know if Pat Mello was on the C4 Commission, but he did speak about this outside the meeting where, as I said, the county was trying to get people to agree to register with the idea, oh, you have to register soon because the city is setting up the state is setting up a law that will require you to register, and you have to register quickly. And apparently very few growers, as I said before, are doing this. But anyway, let's catch some more from someone who is hopefully more knowledgeable than I. And we'll listen to this interview, or at least part of it. And if at any time you want to call in with some thoughts, negative views, positive views, breaking news, you can. The call-in number here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM is 427-3772. 427-3772. So do that, and we'll talk with you. In the meantime, check this out.
Pat Miller was talking about how this is a distinction. This current registration is CAA, the Cannabis Advocates Alliance,
yes,
is trying to separate, well, maintain, the, I guess, the independence of the medical marijuana aspects from the commercial. On the other hand, for those who want to be commercial, it's making it very hard for people who are small growers, yes, to do commercial. And are you also opposing that?
Oh, yes. So the this new system ordinance excludes everyone who's on, you know, smaller than 5 acres, everyone who's within the, you know, coastal zone plus a mile, and there's large setbacks, and the licensing actually starts at, you know, a large garden, 5,000 square feet.
This was not proposed by the C4 Commission.
No, the C4 Committee had more middle ground recommendations. These are more of a conservative approach that's been softened. I mean, I was opposed to the aspects of the C4 thing that said that, you know, that excluded the smaller gardeners, and I think we should have gone about it in an opposite direction and take care of the smallest gardeners and the smallest parcels first and brought them into, you know, some sort of ordinance that helped protect them against the big, big actors that are not just here now but that are coming in the future when industrial cannabis.
Assuming, that Leopold does not actually make meaningful changes, is the
And I will be interrupting, of course, in my usual fashion throughout this interview to give you my own thoughts. But the one thing that was a problematic aspect to this whole conversation with Pat was he describes things that are of concern, like the fact that small growers are being thrown under the bus and the proposed law sucks. But there's no mention of any real organizing by his group, the CAA, that's being done against it. There's no indication in the public sphere that anything is happening there. There's no ads against it. There's no folks out on the street with petitions against it. There's no newspaper articles quoting officials activists with or growers in the Cannabis Advocates Alliance opposing it. One doesn't hear squat from Valerie Correll's Wham, or at least I haven't. Maybe it's just because I'm not reading or viewing the right places. But to me, that's very important. One can talk theoretically about this, and one can wail about it in a private interview with a guy who does a commentary myself on a very small radio station. But unless you get the word out and do some organizing, Proposition 64... which is actually sort of another side of this, is going to pass, and so is the proposal that hasn't yet even seen concrete form, but is going to come back all in a rush at the Board of Supervisors and is going to limit grows. And I mentioned Proposition 64 because this is a hugely funded marijuana law, which a number of medical marijuana activists are very concerned about, because it essentially messes with Proposition 215, the law in 1996 passed by the voters that gave California the broadest possible medical marijuana opportunities. And that will be changed by this initiative, and also give, as I understand it, the legislature the power to make further changes, which is dangerous, because the legislature is can influenced by large interest groups, conservative bigots, drug war fanatics, police agencies that have a vested interest in continuing the drug war. Well, you would think that they wouldn't and would have better things to do. In any case, let's continue listening to Pat Malo on September 7th. Assuming we can get it back on the air, that is.
The CAA is prepared to do a second referendum.
So we didn't do the first one ourselves. That was, we just helped as the volunteer staff. And yes, I mean, that's always on the table of if the community has, if this...
Or the big grower is going to back off and say, we like the ordinance, well, go fuck yourself.
So I don't think anybody likes the ordinance yet, because the ordinance has too big of setbacks and too big of, you know, there's the people who are excluded are not just small growers. There's a lot of parcels that may or may not work and under these new, that will not work if the new guidelines are put in place rigidly, and if they have a process, which is the county is kind of talking about now, of being able to have exceptions and get you into this and get you up to up into compliance with this new ordinance or move spots, then, you know, then it might work out for some people. But the last ordinance didn't work out for everyone. It excluded a lot of people before, when we were just based off of the 10x10 collective system. You know, so we're, so the large people who are trying to do this commercially have had problems for probably the last 3 or 4 years since the ordinance came in, being able to be in compliance with that ordinance. And that's why we have the problems with the enforcement of people who think they're following the laws but end up, or almost following the laws, or attempting to follow the laws, or following what they thought was legal and was legal a few years ago, being in trouble with the enforcement arm, you know, and sheriff. And
just a couple of things. I believe the current law, which is the law that was passed 3, maybe 4 years ago, and which the county attempted to change to make much more repressive, although it wasn't very good to begin with. I think it limits growers to 99 plants, and I think 100, 10 by 10. Although, again, I'm not quite sure, and you'll be able to hear Pat talk about this further. As for enforcement, this was an issue that I brought up and others growers brought up, also at a meeting in the same building in Felton, where apparently they hold a number of these county meetings, about a month and a half ago, when Sheriff Jim Hart, the head law enforcement officer in the county, who is a little bit too beloved of the local ACLU for my tastes, and also seems to be unwilling to rein in his officers on their seizures of marijuana, I've asked him and have so far not gotten any response other than reassurances that he's working on it. And he publicly committed himself, as I've mentioned in past broadcasts, at this earlier meeting about 2 months ago, before a room full of growers and on audio, so it's been captured for history, to provide a record of every parcel that his stormtroopers stormed into, and I call them stormtroopers because that's what armed men with guns going after medical marijuana plots are. It's very simple. There's no, I think, ifs, ands, or buts about it. Rather than, if you think someone's not in compliance, you get in touch with them. You say, we feel you're not in compliance for the following reasons, and you address it. You don't stalk in terrifying families and children with your new military hardware, ready to shoot to kill, because that's what these cops and deputies are trained to do, without any control by the community whatsoever in any meaningful way. Anyway, he promised to provide information about how often this had been done, with whom, what kind of stuff was seized, and of course we haven't heard a peep out of him in terms of actual stats. That's my update on that. It's not a positive one, but it's one that I think is important to be aware of. For those who are real positive about law enforcement authorities, particularly about the sheriff's department in this county.
So, what are the changes from a few years ago?
So the changes are, for years in Santa Cruz County, it was each patient had a 10 by 10, and you could have collective grows, and people had 500 square foot collective grows all the way up to 5-10,000 and beyond collective grows. And the county came in 2014 with their ordinance that had, you know, acreage zoning and, you know, basically 1,000, 2,000, and 3,000 square feet of canopy and 99 with a 99 plant limit. If you hit these qualifications. And so that's the first wave of big changes, where a lot of people who didn't quite fit all the guidelines of that then were exposed to law enforcement and county code enforcement and things. And so that's been the situation and will be the.
And then in 2015, the county tried to pass a very restrictive ordinance.
So in 2015, the county tried to pass.
Did pass.
Basically, grow ban of all collective gardens over 10 by 10, and that's when community groups and CAA and another group formed Responsible Cultivation Santa Cruz that I was involved with, and others, and they really took the helm and got the gathered 13,000 signatures and did a referendum, which stops that law from going into place.
Now, they actually didn't really do the referendum. The supervisors withdrew
their law, and so the referendum wouldn't have to go on to the ballot.
How much did it cost the organizations to engage in that organizing process?
Well, I don't know the specific sum, but it was thousands and thousands.
Is that same amount of money available if it needs to be done again?
I think that the same people who put up that money maybe won't, but I think that there is, depending on how things happen, that there is resources in the community to get that sort of thing done, but it all depends on how this all settles here with the county, and we won't see that for probably a year or more because of the CEQA review process and all that.
Well, what about this whole business that both Hart and now this county person, Melody, you say,
yes,
is actually trying to get, you know, to kind of hustle everybody along into the registration process, it looks like.
Melody is the county official inside who, while we were talking outside the meeting, and I had earlier listened to her for a little while and then got tired of listening to her, her bright little pitch about everybody sign up to get registered, and it's all very easy, and it's very simple, and these are the steps you use, and so forth and so on, to a room of about 50 people. But some of whom left along with me, and we kind of talked outside. The CEQA review process, I'm not too familiar with, but it has to do with environmental review. It's a sort of, I don't know if it's an equivalent to the Coastal Commission's review process, but it has to do with environmental protections and the need to investigate whether the county's regulations unduly impact that. And I probably should have questioned Pat more closely on that. Maybe I will in a subsequent interview. And maybe the issue is not as pressing as I'd feared, because my concern is that the county is likely to come thank you, sir, very quickly down on people with a new law that doesn't give people much chance to organize opposition and will just go into effect. But let's hear more from Pat.
What's the hurry?
The hurry is because the new state regulations that are referred to as MRSA, a few bills that came through a year ago that were signed, has a timeline for when all this licensing needs to go into effect. And since these gardens and dispensaries were only given limited immunity and not given actual permits or licenses from the county or the cities that they existed in. Now all the counties, cities throughout California have been scrambling to put into place some sort of more official permitted or license on the local level so that these businesses or groups can get the state licenses in 2018. So that's why the clock is ticking there.
2018 is a year and a half off.
And so to be able to get into the, people want it, so to be able to get in the pre-registration for the state starts in 2017, hypothetically, this at the state's going slow. And then so they also want, they need, they don't need, but they've chosen to go through a CEQA review process that in a more thorough manner, maybe, we're saying, but it'll take time. So they're trying to get everybody into this registration process to get a baseline for the environmental impact review, the CEQA
stuff. Are you sympathetic with this, or are you skeptical of it?
Well, I'm skeptical of all of, you know, this kind of stuff. I think that it's really, really hard to fit in. I think that when government starts making regulations for things, which it needs regulations, there needs to be things put on business.
And the reason for all the noise is we're next to a fire station. Apparently there was some mechanical business happening. My apologies for the quality of the recording, but listen on.
And so some of this is out of necessity of reeling in kind of an out-of-control money-making scheme of just...
Now, what is actually out of control now?
Well, so, I mean, so that there's the big, big actors in this stuff are able... I mean, not just in... I don't think that unregulated cannabis was as bad as the regulated system that's out there for most other products, but there are, you know, it's filled with people who are more interested in making money to make more money to make more money, just like in everything else.
Who are the big actors in this county?
Well, I don't know any of the... I think that there's... I know that some big ag people are looking to get into this kind of thing, and I think that these rules and everything are, on the one hand, an opportunity to be able to get a little bit back from the big actors being who are just making money and
in this county. Who are the big actors?
Oh, I don't know personally, and I think everyone that I interact with is a small actor. I know the future big actors will be some of the mainstream ag companies that are in South County, but I don't know any specifics about.
Did you want to ask something? I don't mean to monopolize Warpath
here. No, I don't.
Okay.
But yeah, and so my whole overall like idea about this commercial stuff is if there's going to be a new industry that is replacing the old, you know, unregulated industry of cannabis, I want it to be able to like give back as much as possible, you know, through to even if it's through the tax system, and a lot of it goes into other weird areas that I don't agree with the county. But I also want to be able to hold it to higher standards than the other industries around here that where have always been regulated. And then I want to be able to separate the money-making scheme of this whole thing from the patient need and the collective, and be able to finally say, no, this is how these non-commercial collective things are different than the money-making schemes or the true non-profits.
Now, if you had your choice, what kind of a law would you implement?
Well, I mean, I've never seen a law that I like, so the law that I would choose, I probably don't know how to design.
What would you have not?
I would have it be something that the goal of that law would be to keep the... to create a new system of business that you don't see in very often or at all in the mainstream world, where it has room for more than just money to make more money paradigm. And then I would find out how to protect that new, like, fledgling businesses we're trying
Richard
to foster.
Wolf. Richard Wolf is the guy with the model for the business structure that you're talking about, a collective, you know, where the money goes is shared equally with all the members of the and the community. You know, it's something that's devoted towards the good of everyone, not one or two people who are going to make all the money and keep everybody down and making money for the just the sake of profit.
Yeah, so
what
so,
kind of legal structures would be likely to facilitate that?
Well, I mean, that's a big question. But so if we're talking about, and I would love to have a law that says not just all cannabis businesses, but all businesses need to be worker-run cooperatives. But I think the first step to that is when you design policy, government policy, whether we like it or not, is picking winners and losers in the business all the time. And so let's make them pick from more than just some, oh, we're all in business, we all have an equal right to things. Let's look at the societal, like, impact and hopefully benefit that these businesses can have, and let's start choosing our winners from the best possible candidates, you know?
Compared with the proposed ordinance as it was sort of discussed at the supervisors' meeting in May, I think it was, what changes do you want to see before you would sign on to it?
Well, okay, so signing on is hard for me at any level, but what I'm working for and spending a lot of my time right now with this commercial ordinance is being able to bring it from, let's say, hypothetically 10 or 20% of people who are attempting to follow the rules and attempting to be regulated and make money in our businesses in these hills and in this county, are going to be able to get through this, and I want to take that and make it more like 50 or 80% of those businesses are going to be able to get through, and then I want to be able to, you know, be able to influence them on them doing the baby steps towards what we talked about of picking kind of on what type of businesses are we going to, if we're going to pick winners and losers, what type are we going to have? And
well,
so,
well, why should there be any interest? What happened if everybody refused to register for the next 6 months? What would be the impact of that?
Well, so the impact of that would be to, and not that I would be against an organized boycott of this registration program, which is almost what we had, is an unorganized boycott of it because so few people signed up, and that's what has brought this, you know,
there were 48 or something.
Yeah, in 48, and that we know from other surveys that a state organization did that there's 278 people who are intending on applying for state licenses from here, and we probably know that there is, you know, there's 10 times that amount of people who would be interested if the right sort of laws were put into place. So really, I'm, you know, the.
And we're moving to get a little further away from the door where the meeting continues. I just want to say about Pat Malo, though, he's a friendly guy, and he's also very informative. Again, I haven't got independent confirmation of anything he says, nor anything contradicting what he says. And I hope that folks who are listening into this, and you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, will call in with their own thoughts if they have any differing views or additional information or contradictory facts, which I think are important, at 427-3772, 427-3772. It's a little disconcerting to me. Pat has been kind of a figure who has been working very closely, it seems to me, with authorities. He seemed to be part of the organizing of this meeting with the county. He keeps saying he's concerned with finding a way to make the law the least possible restrictive and the most inclusive, or the most restrictive on large ag business groups and so forth, or at least, you know, making sure that the profiteers don't profiteer everything away and throw everybody else under the bus. And that all sounds good. But the question is, for me, why isn't he out organizing a boycott? Why isn't he out demanding a different kind of law that it wouldn't be too hard to put together? I mean, the C4 committee, which investigated all these aspects, all different aspects of the county's growing policies, so that the growers can say, this is the law we want, either pass it or we'll pass it by initiative, you know, bite me, instead of sitting around trying to, oh, placate the authorities and see what can be worked out as a compromise and so forth. I mean, the most basic issue to me, for example, is why isn't marijuana treated like any other agricultural crop? and not treat it as some sort of toxic substance. Similarly, why aren't dispensaries treated like pharmacies and not regard, not given all kinds of requirements of being so many blocks away, so many feet away from a playground, a school, a blah, 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 and having special security requirements? I mean, pharmacies make huge amounts of money, too, and they sell much more toxic drugs. So it's ridiculous. It shows simply it's like having this, it's really clear that there's a form of profoundly accepted bigotry that goes on here that should not be accepted, that must be challenged, and that no one is doing because, oh, you know, well, you're not going to go out challenging that. People have this, I don't know what the, you know, what the rationalizations people use are, but it's not being, the most obvious solutions are not being presented, and I don't hear Pat presenting them either. I mean, I don't know if I challenged him in any of this stuff because I was more interested in sort of learning more information as far from his perspective as to what was going on with the county's latest gambit and whether the Cannabis Advocates Alliance was actually going to do anything to stop it or to propose its own proposal, which it doesn't seem to be doing. But anyway, that was my concern, and I'm going to play some more of this now. And you can call in if you want with your own thoughts, 427-3772.
Yeah, and all their racket. So really we're just looking at softening this, opening up more room because just the people are getting cut out are the smaller people on the end. So we're trying to open up more room to make room for, you know, the smaller people, but make room for everyone who's existing now, because I think that everyone existing now might not have the best ethics, but they're definitely not big players as far as industrial.
And you don't know who the big players are.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
or you're just reluctant to name.
Well, I wouldn't say who they are even if I knew them, just because of the legal climate. But I don't interact with. I assume that I don't interact with the big bit as far as who's got the biggest gardens out there. I don't really interact with anyone who's not attempting to be legal.
So what is this crap? I wouldn't name them because of the legal climate. I don't know. Maybe he means because the big players are likely to be attacked by the government for illegally growing marijuana. That might be a legitimate reason for not naming names. But if the real reason is he doesn't want to be... alienated from the large business interests in the county that are likely to invest lots of money here, then that's hogwash. I mean, that's a form of tiptoeing through the tulips or tiptoeing through the corporate folks, which we need exactly the opposite. We need loud exposure of what's going on, and I hope we get it.
Because I've been jumped out in the open world a long time ago.
What are the corporations that are currently in Santa Cruz that are the big operators?
No, not corporations. Corporations have plans, I would say, and mostly local. I wouldn't say that big corporations are directly, I mean, I know that they're on the periphery involved in things and have subsidiaries and things that'll be doing tests. You know, I know the big tobacco, from just anecdotal stories, has people working on how to convert soy and,
but
you know,
the
corn
people
fields.
Who are currently
here, no one qualifies into that big money thing unless you're talking about some of that South County ag people who have been able to do their little legal gardens just like as just a side on the side of their farms.
So are people pretty much having the same size gardens now, or are there large gardens?
Well, there is no one in Santa Cruz yet who's been permitted for these half acre or bigger operations. But there are people in the, yeah, there's some things that are probably about that size. But I would say Santa Cruz is defined just by there's lots and lots of small of these one, you know, maybe 200 square foot gardens up to, you know, 10,000 square feet is what we're seeing on a regular basis. And some people might have multiple parcels with that size thing.
What percentage of these would be cut off by the current ordinance if it were passed?
So that's what I said. I think that about right now, if the ordinance is interpreted literally, you know, and there's not a lot of exceptions given through this registration process, I would say 10 to 20% of the people of the gardens, but that is just wild speculation just based on what I feel.
So you think that even though the coastal zone is excluded and a mile in from the coastal zone, and everything over under five acres, that still would only cut 10 or 20%?
No, 10 or 20% is getting through it. I would say 80% is, and that's my goal, is to get it so that it's the other way around, where we're saying 80% of the people who intend to get through this thing are getting through. And because
that's quite a radical change from what the Board of Supervisors wants to do. Do you think, though, you have the muscle to push that?
Well, I think that we have a lot of goodwill and people who are genuinely trying to get through this thing with us at the county. I think that we're also battling a lot of preconceptions about what the old industry was and not wanting to transfer those new problems into the future.
And I'm always skeptical when I hear, well, we have goodwill and we're fighting preconceptions. It's sort of like it's all a great rational debate that is going to be resolved when people finally understand what's going on. In fact, these issues were raised last year before the county tried to wham-bam their very restrictive law in May of 2015, and then they were kicked in the ass by the CAA and the, I guess it's Responsible Growers Group, and the referendum was essentially successfully threatened. And then they set up this front group, the C4 group, to research and discuss and analyze and investigate. So all this stuff has already been done. And yet, Pat is still talking about doing it again, doing it some more, instead of raising the alarm in a very clear way as to what they're trying to do. I didn't hear anybody standing up and denouncing the ordinance at the prior meeting with Sheriff Hart, or at this meeting, though I didn't stay for much of it, and I guess I was doing my interviewing outside, as you can hear. So I don't hear these people. It sounds like he's trying to work with the authorities, and that is not necessarily bad, but if the authorities have shown clear bad faith and clear lack of sanity and common sense and blatant entrenched prejudice on these issues, you don't want to work with that. Gee, let's see if we can compromise with the Klan. No, you don't want to do it. Let's see if we can come to an understanding with the Nazis. No, you don't. You essentially amass the power to take another course and to persuade the community to come with you rather than to succumb to a very powerful existing governmental structure, which hasn't got much to do with ordinary people's needs, unfortunately. And again, we're listening to an interview with Pat Malo of the Cannabis Advocates Alliance right outside a meeting of the county's representative, I guess. Melody is her name, who is describing how everybody can easily sign up for all this wonderful registration program that is going to be passed by the Board of Supervisors, whether you like it or not. She doesn't say that, but the implication is it's all a done deal, so let's jump on board and let's get going with this smooth process. Not my favorite way of viewing irrational legislation that seems to fly in the face of what even their appointed committee has been proposing.
And so I think that we need to just keep pushing with the, you know, just the interaction on the county level, and then also just know that we need to get through this, so if it doesn't end up working for the people it doesn't work for when they, you know, sign that thing into law in a year and a half, have the opportunity to, or 2 years or however long it is, have the opportunity to go through the same motions. It wasn't that, I mean, it was a
let me interrupt, because that's a nice, I was going to say that's nice talk.
Yeah.
But the question is, when this came to the Board of Supervisors, didn't the staff completely and radically change the proposal that the C4 committee came up with?
Yeah, and a lot of the C4 members were heartbroken about that. I never thought...
What makes you think it'll be any different this time?
Well, I don't, really. The same reason I didn't think it was going to work out for us going into the C4. I just was going into it with, this is one channel to engage and be able to basically show people that, you know, we're normal human beings and this is a normal thing that's going to be a part of the community in the future, and hopefully a better part of the community than it was in the past, and a better, you know, partner than a lot of the other industries.
Well, I guess the question is, if you felt that way, and I believe you did, believe what you say, why this collusion with county authorities instead of organizing growers to say, this is what we want, we're going to push for it, it's going to be an initiative on the ballot, fuck you, take it or leave it?
Yeah, well, so I think it's a dual channel thing. I'm going to engage with the county, and then, you know, after this event, we're having a meeting next door at the pizza place, free pizza if you want to come. And then, sounds good. And then we're going to be talking about what the options are, you know, but engaging with the county has been a necessary evil, I don't know, in my sense, and it's hard to, I think that this might not go for everyone, but, and it might be delusional on my part, but I feel like my engagement on the county has made a positive impact, and it doesn't mean, and it actually strengthens my ability to do this other channel of, if we're not able to get our way, fuck you, whatever, we're doing this. And that's, you know, that is what's out there. And also, I'm more focused on the, you know, non-commercial kind of smaller, like non, you know, the collectives and this kind of medical thing. And so another goal of mine is to be able to, how do we channel, like, if I had my own stacks of money, I would just be pushing them around where they need to go, and maybe I wouldn't be talking to everybody.
Did you have a thought on that?
I was just saying, we should have artisanal gardens and, you know, small cottage industries, you know, that, you know, people will be able to go commercial from their small gardens, you know, and not be on a big, huge commercial level. So I'm, you know, I'm interested.
Not under the current ordinance, though.
No, not another current.
I mean, under the ordinance that they're proposing.
No, I'm not interested in that. There should be something different.
Yeah. And so there is, you know, the coalitions that we're building, not just within the county, you know, but with the other community groups and people who have been historic adversaries of this, are going to make, if we don't get something that works, I mean, I'm not saying works for the big commercial people, because that's not my main priority, but if we don't get something that works for and X's out all the small people and there's not a channel for them to move into, and we get something that says you can't do this in the traditional collective way, then that's, you know, that has enough juice or popular support with just the little people that might be able to go.
The Bernie approach.
Yeah, the Bernie approach, we'll call it. But yeah, you know, and the difficult thing too is that, you know, it's maintaining the two channels of being able to, you know, interact with the county and then also hold their feet to the fire with things. It's like,
what about the state's proposition for decriminalizing marijuana or legalizing it? Does this have any, do you have any thoughts on this that are related to what's happening here?
So my thoughts on that is that is the same thing that we could talk here and have been talking about, the flaws in the local ordinance. I mean, the flaws in the state ordinance are the new MRSA laws are what is a lot of the limiting thing behind the local ordinance, and then this new Prop 64 will actually cement in a lot of that bad stuff or troublesome stuff in MRSA. So that's one of those things that, you know, it's hard for me to endorse most laws, but I can't say that's a law that's going to help this situation.
You think it will also alter the medical marijuana initiative from 1996?
Yeah, I mean, that's what people say, is that this thing, because it leaves the power up to the legislature, which has already altered, you know, MRSA has altered the Prop 215.
Unconstitutionally, some say.
Yeah, and this is what people say about Prop 64, is that if it's passed, then you won't be able to do that constitutional challenge in court of MRSA. So that's the fear, is that it cements in MRSA.
You know, I think we're going to leave it there. There's another 20 minutes left in this interview, which I'm going to play on Sunday. I do a show on Sunday morning and early afternoon. I invite you to tune into that because I want to really get an update, although Pat Mailo is a very hard guy to reach, or at least I found that to be the case in the past, on how things went at the pizza meeting afterward. I didn't get to that. I had a person with me who had to get back to the Association of Faith Communities shelter program. They don't let people stay out for political events, generally. They'll get expelled from the program. This is this minuscule but much hyped program that some of the churches were doing to provide shelter for 20 people, different churches every night, a total of 20 people. And so I couldn't get to the what the growers actually thought of all this crap at the subsequent meeting, which is too bad, because that probably would be more apropos than this, though I think it gives us some good background in what's going on, and I hope we can look at this further. Let's take a musical break, and who knows, maybe hear some of your phone calls, 427-3772. Looks like the phone lines are open, so use them while you can. That's what I say. And again, I seem to be having a little bit of... Ah, there we go. No problem.
There's a battle going down on Wall Street for the numbers on the screen, where bankers pace around the floor trying to process everything. Money comes and the money goes, it's such a twisted game. Cause all around the world there's people starving. They call it the market, it used to be for slaves, where planters could purchase laborers back in the cotton days. Now it's imaginary money that moves from place to place, and everybody's thirsty for the taste. There's profits derived from weapons burning bodies overseas. Profits derived from prisons destroying families. Profits derived from child labor in the South Pacific. Profits derived from keeping people sick. All you do is invest a bit and hope it takes you far. Don't worry about how evil these companies really are. Just invest your money in the companies that the profits come into. What's good for the company is good for you. In Argentina, the stock people forecasted a crash. So investors pulled their cash out and the economy collapsed. They're trying to suck that profit up before it was too late. Invisible hands control the country's fate. People used to invest in the slave trade, and they got huge plots of land from all the money that they made. Now they invest in these corporations, and the outcome's much the same. They get rich and easily avoid the blame. When the gavel knocks, it's over, and they go home for the day. Well, investors around the world have people redefine their place. Your rent, your food, your wages, they create the price right here based on economic forecasts and fear. Well, there's a battle going down on Wall Street for the numbers on the screen, where bankers pace around the floor trying to process everything. Imaginary money defining how we live. This is what we've come to call achievement.
And that was Ryan Harvey. And I thought I had the name of that song a moment ago, and I think I do. Numbers on the Screen, it's called. And now on the line with me, I have activist Brent Adams. Hi, Brent.
Hi.
And Boy, I spoke with you earlier because I noticed online you had been posting your experiences with a number of different groups, including Flashlights in the Park and your experiences at the Parks and Rec Commission meeting on Monday and God knows what else. Where would you like to begin?
Let's start with the Parks and Rec Commission. That happened on Monday. And I guess it's just another commission, if you're all right starting with that.
I'm fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess commissions just meet about issues and hear different proposals and then make recommendations to be voted on by the city council, right? They're not really a governing bodies at all.
It's interesting. You know, they used to have more power than they did. Ironically, the governing body isn't even the city council. The real power is given to the head of Parks and Rec. I think that's, what's his name, Mauro
right.
Guaro? Or what, how do you pronounce his name?
So his name is Mauro Garcia, and he was
Thank
in the
you.
Room. He made it. So what? You have Santa Cruz Parks Chief Albers, and then also Lieutenant Dan Flippo, who's with the police department, and I believe the Rangers, park rangers, are actually under Dan Flippo. I think it's a strange relationship. But what was announced? Okay, this is all due to the community of people who have encouraged this have been feeling less and less safe by the congregation of people on the river levee for the last 6 months. And it's true, there has been a large congregation of people on the river levee. We can say whatever good or bad about that, but it culminated with a murder that happened, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And so in fast action, the police department and the parks have started with the parks department and the city manager. They first closed the levee. They've installed something like 50 signs up and down the levee, this time both sides of the walking path, so you can no longer be there. But what the action that occurred on Monday was the police department and the parks department stating their new plan, which is to hire a total of 10 new park rangers and have constant presence on the levee from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m. And that, when I say constant, that's nonstop. So there'll always be an officer or a series of officers patrolling on ATVs, the quad runners, or in a truck, or what they say posted up on the levee so that they're and that's the new plan. They're hiring all these new and what I'm surprised at is
let me interrupt you for a moment, Brent, because I mean you got a lot of information. It's coming at me pretty fast. I don't suppose you know what the cost of hiring 10 new park rangers is.
No, they've hired 4 already. They're already sworn in. They said another 6 are coming, and there was no dollar amount. And if you were present during a year ago, July, during the budget hearings, if you recall, the unions locked themselves down and were arrested, and there was I don't know why this year's budget hearings were not nearly as contentious, but. Or maybe they don't happen every year, but what happened a year and a half, I'm sorry, a little more than a year ago, was that Mauro Garcia actually told the council he couldn't cut any money from his budget because they're so pressed and his officers are already doing a lot. It's amazing to me that they can all of a sudden hire 10 new staffing positions, and these are people who are well-trained. Parks officers are trained in lots of manners. They're carrying tasers. They're carrying everything but guns.
The reason I ask you that, Brenda, is for several years you've been working encouraging the community to establish Sanctuary Village, warming programs, and other programs to serve, admittedly, as sort of pilot projects to deal with at least a small number of people in the homeless community, and eventually perhaps to do more. The cost of that is a fraction of what's being proposed here. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this actually is the problem, the paradigm problem, that the way it's kind of a worldview, relationship to a worldview where, and maybe it comes down to the type of people we are, whether we understand that spending money on healing community members as opposed to jailing them and incarcerating them. I believe that if we try to serve our community, especially the people who are in most need, that'll be much more effective than what we're seeing now.
I mean, likewise, Brent, wouldn't it be true that the money that they cut off from the meals program of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which actually I think they may have decided to eliminate that even before the budget cuts a year ago, is only a fraction of what hiring these new, essentially, I don't want to call them public safety officers. I call them homeless rousters. But, you know, you even to phrase it as, well, you know, the people on the levee and the congregations culminated in a killing. I don't think they culminated in a killing.
No, I'm trying to, that's not my view. That's the story that they're running.
Right, well, I that's good you make that clarification, because I think, while it's nice to note the mythology, it's equally important because the mythology is so often cited to dispel the mythology and say that's a bunch of horse shit. There are no figures that justify that. There is no massive, I mean, there's more drug use, you know, and people who are outside will use and sell drugs. That's just how it's going. But, you know, to say that this is, anyway, so I made my point. Why don't you continue with your discussion? I interrupted you because I wanted to make
it's all right. Yeah. I'm beginning to realize that being on the phone with you affords me much more speaking time than being in the studio. Wouldn't you agree?
I stand on the Fifth Amendment on that one.
All right. Let me continue holding forth here then. basically that I find it, so as we know, what we haven't spoken about is the fact that the park rangers also have taken over responsibility for monitoring the downtown. They've replaced First Alarm and the downtown host program. So maybe that's where some money can come from. But if you remember, what was her name? She was the downtown CSO officer who was always...
There was Pam Bechtel, if you're thinking of her.
Pam Bechtel. So if you remember, you couldn't get down the street on a bicycle going in the wrong direction ever. There were hundreds and hundreds of tickets. Now, we've often had this program, you and I, watching the selective enforcement. I just watched one of these park rangers let probably a dozen bicycles go in the wrong direction. He didn't speak to one person on a skateboard going down the center of the street or bicycles on the sidewalk. He was actually just there monitoring people who were visibly homeless. And I was astounded that that's, so they're not really going to be enforcing the regular downtown rules that I think. Anyway, that's a large conversation.
I've also seen that, or at least I've heard from accounts that they are going after moving people along every hour from spot to spot at the, you know, in the bracketed so-called vending free speech zones, and telling them they can't be outside those zones, and of course being present when somebody like Lucero Luna sits next to a building and gets dragged away to jail for it, or when Alex and Joff display their paintings outside the zone and get hauled off, as they have for five times in the last year.
Well, now those are two circumstances where you have individuals that are intentionally challenging the laws.
True.
If you or I were to sit down and just have a conversation, we probably wouldn't get that ticket. But Luna was intentionally sitting, you know, with the bag on. She was challenging the law. In fact, she was trying to get that citation.
Well, what difference should that make, though, Brent? I mean, what's your point?
Because most people aren't going to be sitting in front of O'Neill's with a plastic bag over their head for hours at a time.
No, but there are some who are, and the ones I'm talking about prior to my commenting on those two folks, were people who were just engaging in vending or free speech activity or playing a guitar, and were moved along even though there was no reason to do it.
She was incarcerated nine times or more. 11
citations are what I got from the courts.
Because I only say that because I'm a constant viewer of Mug Santa Cruz, and not just citations, she was being detained on a regular basis. So I was trying to encourage people to intervene because there might be a mental health issue around that. I don't think it's inappropriate for one person to throw themselves on the gears over and over and over, because what she's doing, while it's commendable, it's also really fucking her life up, because she's going to be getting warrants, misdemeanors would go to warrants. She's going to do real time, and they're going to impound her car if they already haven't done that.
Yeah, I haven't been encouraging her to do it. On the other hand, I like to be supportive of whatever she's doing, although I would advise her, Lucero's a hard person to,
She doesn't have proper legal support. On the other hand, Joff and Alex, I don't know their last names,
Skelton and Joff Jones. Go ahead.
Yeah, those guys are, they're a little bit more on their game, let's say, and willing to, they have a game plan for how to fight it in court and take it all the way up the cycle, whereas Lucero's kind of sacrificing a bit of her ability to be free in the future.
No, I agree with you. But let me ask you, let's get back to Parks and Recs, the hearing you were at. Let me ask you, was there much in the way of public participation other than your speaking at the mic?
Yeah, there were, let's see if I remember. And I videotaped a bit of this. Mainly, I think the word wasn't put out widely, and it's always amazes me that, like, members of, Santa Cruz Neighbors or People of Nextdoor.com or mainly people from Take Back Santa Cruz are their group, but I didn't see any other activists, not one. And I only got wind of it because I had read something that another time. I just happened to be a friend of a friend of hers. So, but anyway, I freaked out. Mainly I was just trying to at once utter the name of Joey Schumacher, who had been shot, and give a personal update that I've been very close to his girlfriend and the person who spent his last minutes with, and they still exist out, in a camping experience. And I was trying to express that that everyone who knows Joey said it was not a drug-related crime, and though that's all we're hearing, and for some reason the community, the police department, the news, these new changes within the ability to access the river, and all of this new spending hinges on the fact that there was a drug-related murder. So this is the same old shit that we've been saying forever, just using anything that it can to, take away rights and fund the police department ever more, and without any real... And also what's been happening, this is really frustrating, is for the people who know him, especially his girlfriend, is that the city keeps removing the makeshift memorial that's been placed next to a light pole on the levee. People putting cards and little flowers and candles there, and the city keeps routinely coming through and pressure washing that and removing it. And I asked the commission, what other type of person would that be allowed to occur? If it was a city, for instance, it was a housed community member who had been shot up there, the idea that the city would remove a memorial would be forbidden. People would freak out, but just because this is a homeless person. So there's a lot to be said around all of this.
Let's imagine that happening to the Butchie Baker, Elizabeth Butler memorials, who actually, Baker and Butler, particularly Baker, had a horrible reputation among homeless people as a really abusive police officer, yet he became this big superhero. Let me ask you this. I've run into, people came to the Huff meeting yesterday, and one person talked at length about how he was just sitting on the path, and he was told, or onto the side of the path, and he was told he couldn't loiter there. And it made me think about this, a decree by Martín Bernal or Mauro García or whoever, whatever boss they want, even a law by the city council, but at least a decree. They can close public areas for periods of time, but I don't think they can decree that you can't loiter. I mean, that has been shown to be an abuse of constitutional rights. Do you have any sense of that, Brent?
Yeah, they discussed that. Several of the commissioners, so the commissioners didn't all seem to be, of the, I don't know how to put it, the more socially conservative ilk. They had pretty good questions, like what defines being, for instance, I think that was actually a direct question, what defines loitering on the levee? So we can't step off of the asphalt, but can we stop with a set of binoculars looking at a bird? can we stop and have a conversation as long as we're not blocking the path? And it seemed very, very vague. They were quick to say, of course, all these behaviors are acceptable. But what wasn't mentioned is, what if you happen to be a person with a bike and a bike trailer, and you have to happen to stop and sit down and repair your, pump up your tire? Is that considered loitering? Well, I think we all know the answer to that question.
And what about the issue of a drum circle on Wednesday, which I understand was dispersed? Is that, what's your understanding of that?
I really wanted to make that. I've been working on a grant for the Warming Center.
Hello?
What happened to the drum circle during 2010, 2011, or I think it was 2011 and 12 when the levee was also off limits? Maybe you recall they had signs up there. I think actually it was allowed because it was only the river side of the levee, but now it's both sides. So I don't know what happened to the drum circle or if that's considered. And I've seen an arrest up on the river levee, and like I said, the memorial is being removed daily.
Now, I wanted to mention that you have posted online your at least some clips from the public from the Parks and Rec Commission hearing on Monday, and I'm wondering, I take it that there was nobody else doing video? Do you know if anybody was doing audio? Is there an audio being kept of that for public use?
No. As you know, the commissions and many of the meetings that are not council meetings are never recorded. But so you can go to it's a Facebook page. Anybody can see it. It's called Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz, and there's two videos of this.
How long are the videos?
And there's also a Sentinel news story relating to it.
Homeless outside, you say?
Yeah, homeless outside in Santa Cruz, and that's where I put things that aren't related to Warming Center or Sanctuary Camp or bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Those have other distinct.
It should be
pages.
Mentioned that you've also put in activist work trying to encourage the city to address bathrooms by doing some porta potty cleaning. I don't know if you've cleaned bathrooms, but yourself.
Yeah, no, we were cleaning porta potties all last summer, got the city. It triggered the city to start cleaning them, having the contract expanded from 3 days to 5 days. There still is need for that sort of thing, and I if there's anyone listening who wants to contact me about the Downtown Bathroom Task Force, we still need advocacy. Also, Zav Hirschfeld does another type of advocacy around petition drives.
The Give a Shit campaign, as I recall.
Give a Shit campaign, correct. Between the two programs, I think they've been moderately effective. I think Zav might be credited more with the opening of the overnight bathrooms, but unfortunately, they're not ADA compliant porta potties. And I'm just surprised that the city's willing to plunk a porta potty right down in a downtown zone. It just shows what a piece of shit cheap town Santa Cruz is that they can't pony up for something like a Portland loo.
What about these porta potties that have these, public, looks like, I don't know if they're public bathrooms, or just a picture of a man and a woman, in blue and white, as they do in some restroom areas. Maybe you've seen it at the corner of Cedar and Lincoln, and then there's another one that's down a couple more blocks. But the one at Cedar.
Those are the ones I'm talking about.
But they're locked during the day. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, they're meant to fill in for over. Those are open all night long from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. They're meant to be active when the other more established, brick and mortar and steel bathrooms in the parking garages closed and are locked at 10 p.m. Then the parks officers, I'm sorry, the city work Department of Public Works comes over and unlocks these.
You've actually experienced that. You've checked out a bathroom after 10 o'clock and found that. I mean, the porta potty.
Oh yeah, it's a new program that's been established. You can find that information about that on Downtown Bathroom Task Force. So there are two porta potties that are part of this new overnight program, and there's information and little maps on the exterior. They create a little wood housing on the outside to try to make the plastic porta potty a little more attractive, which you really can't do from the front. But yeah, so there are a total of three downtown porta potties. One's open, 24/7, if you can use it because it's so disgusting usually. And then which is clean 5 days a week. And then these other two, one is in the Locust Street parking lot. It's actually Cedar at Union, the parking lot back there behind the Locust Street garage. And then the one, as you mentioned, at the corner of Cedar and Lincoln. And they have locks on them all day long, which is frustrating if you have to go pee and you run up to it. But they unlock them at 10 p.m. and they lock them again at 6 a.m.
Well, so I notice, I mean, there's no signs on them, which would give people some understanding as to what's going on there.
If you walk up to it, you'll see a little sign and map on the side of the unit.
Oh,
not
I see.
On the front.
Okay. I've never noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I think it's a poorly conceived program. They really need to put a lot more thinking into signage and public awareness campaign. Again, it's just a half measure. It's not even a half measure. We can do so much better. And what many of us are advocating for are 24-hour ADA-compliant bathrooms. Let's just pony up with the money. And here's the short take on it is we understand that you have to build, you know, that these things are going to get broken and damaged and vandalized once in a while. That's just everybody in the country and world knows that. But you build that into the program financially with a contingency fee that every few months you're going to have to repair the thing. We're all adults here. And also that people may have sex or be doing drugs or fall asleep. We're all adults. We know that this stuff happens in bathrooms. It happens in our homes.
I mean, you're right, Brenton. It should be said that what I learned from the public works worker who was cleaning the 24-hour bathroom that was open between, I guess, June and December of last year, the one that's right across from New Leaf Market on Cooper Street. No, not Cooper Street. SoCal.
No, it's SoCal.
On SoCal. He
SoCal
said
on
the
front.
Yeah, SoCal and between Front and Pacific, on Front actually, was that the reason they closed it down, as I've mentioned on this show before, is because the people were found sleeping in it. That's what he said. The only time he called the cops, and he was the guy who regularly cleaned it, a former radio broadcaster, by the way, at Free Radio, was that homeless people were sleeping in the bathroom and that he had to call the police to remove them. It wasn't because there was a...
Can you believe that?
I mean, you know, it shows you what the shelter situation is. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, no. That's what we have to look at is societally or as, you know, system-wide. And we have to... We're beginning to understand that the city has almost no mechanisms in service of humanity, the basic functioning of a human individual and what they need. All they have are these very few, like police and taser, wearing rangers. And, if a human being falls asleep in the bathroom, then that's cause for closing the bathroom overnight. Again, it always should be, restated that the county is actually legally responsible, but for human health and well-being, except only so much as the federal government funds flow through the county in the last there. I would like to see us do better. And it's no wonder if the city...
Brent, you're beginning to break up over there. I think
shift and talk about those flashlight thing real quick.
I want to do that. I just want to say finally about the bathrooms. The City Hall bathrooms have been closed during the day for a while, claiming vandalism. Do you have any updates on that?
No, I took a photograph of that for the Facebook page. I don't understand. It's weird that when one bathroom gets vandalized, you'll see two bathrooms get shut. That's classic sort of Department of Public Works tactic is if there's, you know, one thing breaks in one, they'll close them both, and that's been occurring over there. I don't know what happened.
Okay, go on to flashlights in the park, which of course is the county program to reestablish safety in the parks by bringing out a bunch of folks at night to, I don't know what, have midnight picnics in the park or snoop around.
I really couldn't. I mean, this dragged me out of my home office when I have other things to be doing. I really, my workload is incredible. But I saw on City of Santa Cruz Sheriff's Facebook page that they were welcoming community members out to various parks overnight. And this happened last Sunday. I expect it'll happen again this Sunday, a different park in each neighborhood. They want you to bring a flashlight at 8 p.m. and join them in the park, and it's all very vague. And so I was all over that Facebook page interacting with people. And this is fascinating about the sheriff's Facebook page is there's a deputy monitoring that page regularly and will answer your questions. That's rare. So I did get to interact with a sheriff's deputy on that page. And I said, please state the explicit purpose of having citizens enter a park while it's closed to associate with law enforcement and walk around the park with flashlights. You know, I think the unwritten is, of course, they're training, they're welcoming and encouraging people to go into their park after hours, which is illegal, with flashlights, with the express purpose of poking around to see if there's anything that, you know, and the things that are unmentioned are either people sleeping, people hanging out, people doing drugs. But when we're talking about overnight, it's just people sleeping. And I actually met, his name is, oh, shit, I had a card or something. Here it is. And he's the person that I guess ostensibly has been answering me online. His name is Sergeant Roy Morales of the Sheriff's Department. And he was out there, and he goes, oh, you're the person who was talking with me on Facebook. And I asked him, what are people expecting to experience in the park? And he said, well, they're encountering the hot spots where people are sleeping. And I said, you're showing them the hot spots? And he said, no, they're showing us where the hot spots are. So it's like you've said, you know, turning people into, you know, kind of a little police.
Vigilantes, actually.
Vigilantes. I think on the face of it, it's the most frightening thing I can imagine that the police department would encourage people to go into their park and park, poke around in the bushes where people are simply sleeping. And it all hinged on the specter, this frightening thing that there had been gunfire in the community last week. If you knew, there were three different incidents besides the murder, where people were popping off guns in the community. And I don't know what to say about that. My assumption, I will say something, I think it's just people coming into town as tourists and firing guns. That was my experience living in the beach left community. But anyway, so my quick report is I met one group. They were not from that neighborhood. They were from the west side. This happened at Winkle Park off of Thurber.
Where is Winkle Park, Brent?
Winkle Park, so if you know Thurber, it's actually just east of the Dominican Hospital area. Thurber Avenue cuts back into the hillside, and then there's a little bit of a neighborhood there. I don't know how to describe it, but it's on Soquel near the Highway 1 interchange.
How many folks were snooping? How many folks were snooping around, I should say, patrolling the park with the sheriff?
I counted very few. I thought it was going to be – there were more people on the Facebook page than there were actually in the park. I think I counted maybe 12 people total, but I could have missed some. It was very dark. That park doesn't have any lights. And actually, I would actually put this out there. If you are a person experiencing homelessness and you need a safe place to sleep, Winkle Park does seem like a good one. I'd never been there before. I was surprised. Like, yeah, that's a good park to go sleep in.
Does it have a bathroom?
It's not that it doesn't have a bathroom, but it's a huge green space, no lights. We didn't see any homeless people sleeping. There was nothing to find there that night. That was the ironic thing. But I met one group. They seemed to be Take Back Santa Cruz types from the west side, and they were there saying, we're just trying to help this neighborhood take this park back. And then I met some people who lived down the street. They were very thoughtful and at first also had the same sort of rhetoric, saying there are people, you know, they say homeless people here, but they don't seem to be causing any problems. And he goes, he actually recognizes some of them from living in the neighborhood, and they're now homeless. He said there are people who are in cars who drive up. And he just said he's always wondering what's really happening in the park. His confusion has some effect on his own life where he doesn't go to the park very much because he's confused about what behaviors are going on there. I encouraged him to just spend more time in the park, go meet the people he's most afraid of. I think he'll be surprised at how friendly and welcoming they'll be. That's my experience. I'm on a three-month, four-month tour of the entire West Coast
Now, Brent, you in the past, I know you're doing that, and we actually talked about that on the air, and I hope to see more of your work on it.
I'm not trying to segue.
No. I'm not either. But I want to interrupt you to remind the community and to kind of jump back to the fact that when you went on a similar needle mania quest about 4 years ago, in order to observe Take Back Santa Cruz running around finding needles in the Santa Cruz City area, and en route to that, there was a hassling being done of a guy in a sleeping bag, which you videoed some of, or you photographed some of. Was this in any way reminiscent of that?
This seems more like people who... So Take Back Santa Cruz no longer seems to be doing their positive loitering events like they had. And I think that's a bummer, because I think that's the most positive thing that they'd ever done, which means come to this spot and hang out with people in your community because you're confused about what to do around crime. And maybe you knew that I joined some of those positive loitering things to try to gauge that community. And then I ended up finding, like I did this night in the park with the flashlights, that I actually met, the second group that I met, were very thoughtful and compassionate and actually were totally open-minded, and then end up liking several of the Facebook pages, and where they didn't have any suspicion or hatred. They were confused, and it kind of triggered some fear. But what the thing you're saying about following people, Take Back Santa Cruz down the railroad tracks looking for needles, I think we'll find this, which is demonstrated by some of my new friendships with people in groups who I don't normally congregate, is that people, we have a lot of differing opinions, but, and online it's terrible, or the way we interact, when we don't meet people, but once we meet people, we're actually seeing that people are, even the most notorious Take Back Santa Cruz person in person has some, there's something there. Like somebody last night said, I'm not going to tell you who I am. I'm Take Back, and I have a lot to say. You've been hurting the ability for my children to be safe in this town. And then I was like, you don't even know me or what I do. And she, over a few minutes, we actually had a decent conversation, and we agreed about various things, about the fact that we care about Santa Cruz and we care about safety in Santa Cruz, and we disagree on what mechanisms create that. But it was talking to somebody who hated me and finding common ground was, it's a little bit of an epiphany, and you probably experienced that too. I feel like I'm ranting now, but...
No, I mean, I have the same experience with some Take Back Santa Cruz people that I see regularly at City Council.
Yeah.
The problem is here that that doesn't change the political impact of what they do. And what they do, it shortens the lifespans and makes miserable the fate for people outside, which is already bad, and makes it worse, as you know. And so you can make friends with them, and there's nothing wrong with making friends with people, and you can communicate with them, but it doesn't really change what you're doing unless you organize people on the other side to oppose it. That's been my view. And you and I kind of have a fundamental disagreement. I've talked about protests as a way of doing it, and you've talked about how that's not been effective, and we had that conversation in the studio. But I want to give you a chance to segue into your... you've been successful in getting, what was it called? Kickstart funding for your...
Well, it's a perfect segue, because our disagreement hinges around basic tactics. And for me, as someone who's employed lots of tactics that I'm trying to move away from, mainly what I'm hoping to do is, how do we change hearts and minds, if I can use a Bush phrase? How do we actually go into someone's perception and blow their minds and open them up so they can be a more compassionate person? What I've discovered is protest doesn't change people on the opposite side's minds. Our protests only empower Take Back Santa Cruz. So how do we stop that and build this middle? And I may be called a moderate, but what I'm hoping to do with, I'm starting a film project called Out of Sight, Out of Mind. I've toured most of the West Coast, and I'm still on tour. But my role as a warming center administrator had me coming back into town for a little bit. I've interviewed more than 300 people. I've been to 30 cities, and I'm heading up north to celebrate and investigate a lot of the programs that have been successful for a long time. I want to kind of get a little more deep into those, interview the people in the neighborhoods. So that'll be a project I'm working on all through the winter. I'll be editing it. I did have a Kickstarter because I funded it myself, and I spent all my own personal money. I don't have a wage from Warming Center. I do some other side work to fund myself. So the Kickstarter was successful at 151%. That was great. I asked for a little more than outside, you know, the Kickstarter.
Brent, did you ever get the money that I contributed?
No, your name never came up in that.
Wow. Maybe that was because my card went bad at that point. But I did contribute something. I'll have to give it to you in person when I see you.
Robert, numerous times you've helped various projects over the years.
And will again. But, you know, I mean, let me just say in response to what you said, and we really probably should end it because I want to get a few comments in before the end of the hour. And, you know, no, you're doing fine. You know, I'm not trying to suggest you're, you know, in any way talking too much or anything of that sort. Though I hate to quote a war criminal, LBJ used to say, and I think it's true, if you may remember, you know, about the hearts and minds stuff. And that was big about, you know, get the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese and all that horse shit. It was, you know, if you grab them by the balls, their hearts and minds will follow. And while it's a bad thing, if you want to look at, you know, what he tried to do in Vietnam and the murderous activity that went on there, the civil rights legislation that was passed during the 60s in the national government, which forced Southern voter registrars and Southern governors and Southern citizens councils and so forth to actually start changing, didn't involve their hearts and minds at all. In other words, it involved changing the law, and it happened through massive protests. Yeah. It didn't happen because Kennedy got...
I totally agree with that. I'm not against protest as a tactic or a strategy. But what we've been seeing in the entire country is that protest hasn't had much effect around homelessness for some reason. It does around Black Lives Matter. It does, and there's something that we have to start acknowledging, and maybe you have, is there's something around homelessness that's different than race. It's deeper. It's classism that we can actually say that a person of African descent is on the same par as ourselves. We shared work and housing with them, but not a homeless person. There's something about a caste system that we're creating, and we actually have children of homeless people now living outside. And so when I say hearts and minds, the idea is that can I create a documentary that demonstrates clearly that these are people I feel like I'm using classist phrases myself, like we would never say about somebody who has a different race. But people are really able to articulate their own experience to the point where I actually have been preferring to hang out with people experiencing homelessness because their worldview and their experience and their experience of society is so much more potent than most anyone else's. It's happening right to them, and they're sleeping outside night to night. It's heartbreaking, but it's so real and enlivened that it's really been something.
I know, Brent, that you've said that, you know, you've been going from town to town, and it's not just, you know, kind of black like me blackening your face and, you know, as they did, as the guy did when we went south and wrote a book about it in the 60s himself.
No, I'm wearing the same shirt and
pants. You are, you know, for all your life, though you know, you may come from a middle class background, I don't know where you come from, but you also have, you know, you're a poor person. You're not a rich guy.
I was raised a poor person. I'm still a poor person.
Yeah, and so you understand that. And more important, your aspirations don't seem to be to, you know, get a white picket fence and a nice comfortable retirement. Maybe they are, I don't know. But from what you're doing right now, it seems to me you are, you know, you're out there parked in the parking lots when you're wandering about, your vehicle's breaking down, you're doing your own, you know, makeshift stuff as you go. And I think that has to be appreciated in terms of what you're doing. That doesn't mean we will agree on everything, of course.
Yeah. No, I think. Well, I what will happen is if this, it's kind of like what happened around. I have to stop using the AIDS analogy, but the movie with Tom Hanks and Ron Howard called Philadelphia. Before that, the idea that there would be a movie about AIDS and homosexuality and the fact that Tom Hanks is fucking Denzel Washington, you know, that was challenging in the late 80s. But that movie really changed the tide of people supporting AIDS research and coming to grips with the fact that, you know, it's decades before same-sex marriage, but I think it was a huge thing. I aspire to do something similar, meaning that you can show people that you actually begin to care about and they could change your mind about what general homelessness is. People are othering people, and when they create, when they say that the people who are sleeping outside are undeserving of housing or shelter or bathrooms at night, we can actually send law enforcement out there. We don't care if they're being tased or having their last personal belongings trashed over and over and over, and they're freezing at night. We as a Santa Cruz community, I've been astounded at the amazing support for warming centers, but also really the lack of support. The county hasn't funded it. The city doesn't fund it. Homeless Action Partnership doesn't fund it. Nobody funds it except actual citizens and some, you know, fundraisers. So I feel like I'm ranting.
So let's leave it there, Brent.
You and I have the same end cause, which is trying to reduce the suffering and see some more humane shelter for people who sleep outside. You and I share that.
Although again, I guess I take more of a civil liberties view. But let me pick up this conversation later with you when you got more power on your phone and I got more time on the air.
Okay, let me one last plug. So
yeah,
Out of Sight, Out of Mind movie. It's a Facebook page. That's where I'm dumping information and videos about the project as I go. Also, Santa Cruz Sanctuary Village, the Warming Center Program, Downtown Bathroom Task Force, Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz, and Keep Santa Cruz Weird. These are all Facebook pages that we're hoping to get people to look at for different issues. Thank you, Robert.
Sorry about that, folks. We had a blank space there. Got about 5 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in, phone lines are open, 427-3772. If you have any thoughts about anything you've heard in the last hour, either on the struggle to resist a supervisorial crackdown on cannabis or sheriff and police and city council crackdown on homeless people outside. That's really the issues for me on this show. Please call in 427-3772, 427-3772. Jessica, who was going to come on the air with us today and talk about wretched conditions at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, specifically lice and other things that she's been getting there, and that she's actually gone to see lawyers to deal with it because she can't get them to improve conditions, and she has friends who are there and she's really concerned about it, and she feels money is being misappropriated that was supposed to be used to deal with this condition but instead is being used for essentially painting things over there. And I can't say yay or nay, but that's her claim. I hope to have her on perhaps on Sunday, perhaps next Thursday. She's apparently in a really wretched condition. She's just describing discrimination. They won't let her access meals there. They won't let her access other services there. Sort of a similar problem that a lot of people are having, or a number of people are having anyway. And I'll be talking more about that. And if you have anything you want to report on what's been going on, you can call me off air. Again, I work both putting stuff out on this radio show as long as we broadcast, and we're losing our transmitter in about 2 weeks. and I'll have to put in a plug for that. But you may call me off air at 423-4833, 423-4833, and give me any updates on what's happening outside. Pat and John Colby called me today with news that they tried to present some concerns to the city attorney's office and were literally attacked by somebody in the city's attorney's office, shouting and screaming at them and demanding they leave. John Colby reported that he was trying to present to the city attorney a letter, which I got from Homeless Lack of Services Center Director Phil Kramer and passed on to John Colby and others, that states, in essence, that the shelter was closed, full, closed isn't the word, but full, had no space throughout the summer or throughout much of the summer, and that this could be then presented to court, as has been the case in past years, if anybody gets a camping ticket to prove there was a necessity for them to sleep or camp that night, and therefore they should not be charged $198 or whatever the latest thing. I think it was $158, but it's gone up. Again, it's not clear. I've gotten different reports. In any case, Colby reports that he was attacked by one of the city attorneys. I'm not sure if it was Tony Condotti himself or someone else.